So, Caitlin, who are we canceling today?
You know, I think it's time we cancel the politicians who are trying to ban TikTok.
Oh, yes. The fear-mongering about social media.
Hey, everyone. I'm Caitlin Burns.
And I'm Oliver Ash Klein.
And you're listening to Cancel Me, Daddy.
The show where we take a closer look at all of the panic around cancel culture.
With thoughtful analysis.
And verbal shitposting. I just want to start by telling our listeners thank you for your patience. I have had a wild couple weeks that have involved, I'm not going to get into it, but some personal stuff, a visit to the ER, getting sick, and just... it's just been a couple weeks. So thank you for your patience. And I am so excited to be back.
You know, we also tried to record this episode a while ago, and we had like a literal last minute cancellation from our guest who we are going to reschedule for a future date. But it was just one thing after another trying to get this one out. So, yeah. I hope you all like this one.
Yeah, we have a really interesting conversation about youth and social media and kind of all of the conversations around banning TikTok and things like that. So I'm actually really excited to start talking about that with you, Caitlin. So I think we should just get into the show.
Yeah, let's get into it.
Okay, so the TikTok bans.
Yes.
The TikTok bans.
Yes.
So I think there's a lot going on, right? We both have the impact of social media on kids and the potential for Chinese companies to spy on Americans, right? There's kind of two things going on here. I really want to focus on the impact on the kids, but I don't want to ignore the other stuff. And so basically, the U.S. Surgeon General recently released an advisory saying that, you know, social media and the way that kids are using it is not good for them. They're on it all of the time. Talking about like setting, made some recommendations for setting boundaries with social media, things like that. I would say that a lot of that is good, right? Like, I think that, you know, social media is addictive. I think we're all on social media too much. I don't think this should just apply to children, right? Yeah. Like, I think that the stuff about it being addictive, fear-mongering about just children kind of takes it off. It makes it about, oh, kids shouldn't have access to social media, instead of regulating social media to make it safe and make it non-addictive, which I think is something that shouldn't just be for kids. I think that should be for everyone. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, you have kids. Is this something that you worry about?
Oh, all the time. All the time. In fact, my kids aren't allowed to have social media, as a matter of fact. Not until they're older, at least. And to my knowledge, neither of my kids have any social media accounts, although one of them is probably way too young for it to be interested in it anyway. But for me personally, like, as somebody who has, you know, a moderate Twitter following, I don't want people to know, like, what my kids' social media handles are. Like, can you imagine the kind of shit that like TERFs would throw at literal children because I happen to be their parent? Like, that to me is terrifying. And it's really interesting too, because my older daughter and I have had a lot of conversations about this. She grew up, you know, even before I had any sort of following, she grew up watching like family YouTubers, like the parents who would just like film their kids and turn it into YouTube content, which is a whole other discussion, which I feel like we could get to maybe later because I have a whole rant about it. But like, my daughter grew up watching that stuff and she's like, I want a YouTube channel. I want to be a YouTuber. Like, can we be a YouTuber? And our answer was always absolutely not. Like, no, because there's just too much to that. Like, you open your life up so much to people by doing that. And like, now that I have a social media following, I feel even more strongly that like, I don't want my kids anywhere near it. not only because of my association, you know, the association that they would have with me, but also just because I've seen what social media has done to me. And I worry that they might be exposed to that also.
I mean, to me, it makes a lot of sense that, especially with, you know, who you are on the internet and the vitriol you get, not wanting your daughter to be exposed to that, or like people to find her, right?
Yeah.
And so that makes a lot of sense to me. You know, I think the other element of it, though, is that, at least to me, I think that social media is a really important avenue for young people to find people like them, explore their interests, find community, see queerness. And, you know, while there's a lot of propaganda and misinformation, there's also a lot of really good information out there. I'm not sure that a lot of young people have, like, you know, the ability to sort out the good from the bad information. But I do think that, like, a lot of young people are, like, really a lot more aware of the state of the world than I think that I was when I was that age. And so, you know, I think that social media is a really mixed bag.
Yeah, I think that my take on this is, even though, like, I don't want my kids to have social media, I still think it's the parents' choice on this. And I don't think it's, like, I don't think it should be up to, like, the state. Like, the governor of Montana recently signed a bill that bans TikTok in the state. I don't agree with that. Like, I think that's just heavy-handed and overbroad. We both grew up with the internet to a certain extent. Like, I had the internet in high school. We had AOL back then, which was also a form of social media, although we don't think of it necessarily like that now. But I can remember, you know, cyberbullying was a thing even when I was a teenager, and you're younger than I am. So I'm assuming that was the case, you know, something similar was the case for you also. This stuff isn't new. Like, I don't know that there's something, like, uniquely dangerous about social media today that wasn't also true for, like, AOL back in the day. Because I was a, you know, 14-year-old when I first got the internet, and I was a deeply closeted trans girl. And that was, like, the only space that I had to sort of exist in the world, is how I saw myself. And like, some of the shit that I did was really stupid. Like, I've mentioned before, but, like, I used to talk to just men who were looking for sex. Because that was the space that you had on the internet. Like, there was no, like, trans kids chat room, like, trans teens chat room. Well, there was, but it was really just creepy men, like, looking for, like, you know, pedophilic opportunities. So, like, I don't know what to think, because I recognize, on the one hand, like, I could have gotten really, really, really hurt by that. And it was really dangerous and really stupid. But on the other hand, like, I still have memories of being able to explore myself in that way. So what I wish that we had was a way to protect kids on social media. And I don't think that there is currently.
Yeah. You know, I think that you can teach your kids about safety online, right? Like, you can teach them how to set boundaries, teach them about what's safe and unsafe, teach them about red flags. And so that seems like one avenue, and one thing that can be done. I mean, so growing up, like, my mom was, like, really scared about the internet and, like, you know, what could happen, right, if I was on the internet. And I think, and I had a lot of limitations over how long I could be on the internet and what I could do on the internet. And I think that really impacted me finding my queerness. It really impacted me connecting with people who were like me. I was really bullied in school. Like, I was bullied really, really bad in school. And that, in, you know, that would have happened. Some of it was on the internet. Some of it was just in school. And that would have happened regardless. And what I didn't have was a space to be cringe and weird and just be myself. And like, you know, my mom was like very, very anti-porn. And so I had like very anti-porn values in. And so, you know, and, you know, I don't think that like kids watching porn all the time is good, but like kids are curious and they're going to like, you know, look at whatever and figure, and like, I probably would have figured out stuff about my sexuality earlier if I had been exposed to like a little bit. Right. And also it's like normal for kids to like what you were doing, like to do something that's like a little bit against the rules or like something that you shouldn't be like, you know, like, cause kids are like figuring stuff out and testing boundaries and stuff and like shielding them from everything isn't realistic. Or I don't think shielding them from everything is even good. I think that like, on one hand, you want to protect them and make sure that they don't get into trouble, but like, what kid is not going to like be exposed to something that they should, like, that's part of growing up.
Right. Yeah, I totally get that. I just like imagine, you know, I'm like sitting here imagining like, what if I had agreed to like meet up with one of these quote unquote guys I was talking with?
Oh, that would have been bad. Yeah, absolutely.
Right. So how do we like create that line? Or like, you know, thankfully I'm such a boomer that my early internet days didn't allow uploading pictures. So like, there's all these different things that go into this discussion.
Oh, you can have like no meeting someone on like from the internet without adult supervision.
Is it parents enforcing that? Is that a law that we make? Like, what?
I think that's parents enforcing it. And I think that like part of that is like having a really frank conversation with your kid about like what some people online are trying to do, right? Not to scare them, but to like make them understand like there are people out there that want to hurt you and are pretending to be other people, right? Or do you like a video chat with someone before and have adult supervision when you meet up, or like meet up in a public place and have a video chat before? You know, like there are all these things that you can do, and you can have like frank conversations with your kid to make sure that they can do what they need to do, what they can do to keep themselves safe. Because at the end of the day, like there's always going to be some kind of danger. And so the best thing, and there's danger even when your kid gets older and is an adult, like the best thing that we can do is teach our kids how to be safe and give them the tools to make good decisions and vet people.
Well, now I'm down memory lane here, Oliver. I actually got my first date on AOL.
Yeah.
We went to a Friendly's.
What's a Friendly's? Is that like a fast food restaurant?
It's not a fast food restaurant. It's like a family restaurant, quote unquote. Okay. They're big where I grew up in Western Mass. And I think they're most well known for ice cream.
Nice.
And the only thing I remember about that date is I spilled water all over her by accident. But that ended up being our icebreaker.
I've spilled water all over someone on a date, so
you're
not alone. I got ice cream up my nose on my first date, if that makes you feel better.
Oh, God. Oh, dear. Oh, shit. Oh, fuck.
That's worse, right?
I think so. We also can't separate this conversation from the moral panic against trans people that we're experiencing now, particularly trans kids, because of, you know, ideas like rapid onset gender dysphoria, which claims that trans kids, at least some trans kids, it depends on who you talk to, aren't really trans, and they're really just following for a social media trend or trying to like get likes on social media. I just can't like look at these Republicans voting for these like TikTok bans or whatever without seeing that as part of their agenda. Like, and a lot of them come right out and say that this is why they're voting to like ban these things. But like you said, you know, you and I both found out more about our own queer identities from having access to the internet. And that's what scares a lot of these people that are doing this. So we can't let that point go by without mentioning it.
Yeah, by limiting access to information, basically folks can control, right? Yeah. Have more control over their kids, right? It's about control and power and limiting who they can be or what they see, what they can see themselves as. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there is a way, like, you know, ultimately the reality is that like parents do have, you know, power over their kids. Mm-hmm. But it's really important to use that power with care. and to not limit in your kid and not make your kid smaller.
Yeah.
And what that does by limiting access to information about, you know, queerness, about transness, about who you know, your kid can be,
yeah,
right, it is ultimately, like, it's really shitty and abusive.
Yeah.
And all of the social contagion fear around trans youth is directly out of the playbook from, like, the 80s and 90s about gay people, right? Yeah. And, like, the reality is, it's being able to imagine and see who you can be makes everyone's world bigger. And that world getting bigger means that more people are going to understand themselves as trans, but it's not a social contagion. It's, this is who people are. And without all of the shame, without all of the abuse, without all of the ways that the world tries to make us smaller, when we're supported to be who we are, there are more of us.
Yeah, and it's not just Montana either. In March, Utah became the first state to prohibit social media services from allowing users under 18 to have accounts without the explicit consent of a parent or guardian. So this is definitely a trend. I know that there's a national bill about youth access to social media that has been discussed that even has Democratic support. So we shouldn't sit here and talk about this as, like, emanating from the right, because it's never that simple, is it?
Nope. It's on the left as well. Yeah, the TikTok ban nationally failed this year, but we will see. Yeah. We will see where that goes. I mean, a lot of the in addition to concerns about youth, some of it has to do with fears around China spying on Americans and spreading propaganda, which, on one hand, yeah, that is a concern.
Yeah.
On the other hand, how many corporations have access to our data, are spreading propaganda and spying on us? The U.S. Yeah. government is doing that as well. You know, misinformation and spying from anywhere is concerning to me. But what's concerning to me is they're concerned about this overreach of power from this other state, and not overreach from corporations, overreach within our own government. And also the bill would give the U.S. more ability to spy on Americans, which I don't love.
I mean, in terms of propaganda, we're also getting it from, like, Elon Musk.
Yeah, like, I don't disagree that there's concern about, you know, spying and abuse of power, but I don't think that TikTok itself is like the larger problem around misinformation and spying and security. It's just like a scapegoat to be like, oh, we're dealing with this problem and we only care about it in this capacity, and kind of deflecting all the other capacities that's happening in.
I mean, if we're really concerned about that, shouldn't we be teaching kids how to identify and counter propagandic messages?
Oh no, because then because then they would know what they were getting in school and from the Republicans.
Yeah, they would ban that from a lot of schools real quick.
And it also just seems like such a strange time to be a young person. You know, like, I do think that a lot of kids are on social media a lot, and it is addictive, and that's not good for them. But also, like,
I mean, you pulled up a statistic for us before that we started recording that says, you know, survey results from Pew Research have found that up to 95% of teens reported using at least one social media platform, and one third said they use social media almost constantly.
Yeah, and that's not good for our brains. Like, I used to use social media constantly and it made me miserable.
Yeah.
And so kids are using it, and that's concerning, and their brains aren't as developed, but, like, it's also addictive for adults. And so I think, you know, if we're going to be regulating, we should regulate the companies, like, not making it addictive, or, you know, making some kind of doing something for the companies, not like, oh, kids can't use social media, because that's actually really anti-queer and violent, honestly. And so I think there are other ways to approach it. And what I'm seeing is literally no one with any kind of power is approaching it in a way that is actually going to help kids. and support kids and support, you know, adults using it as well. Yeah. And that's concerning to me.
I think one of the interesting things about this show is because of all of the work that we've done on this stuff, we've both ended up like reevaluating our approach to social media. But it's hard to do that on a mass scale, right?
It's so hard.
Yeah.
Because like, everyone's traumatized and traumatizing each other. And that's not all social media is. It depends on what platform. That's a lot of social media.
I mean, it's really fucked up because if the government tries to regulate social media, they do it in a way that like favors whatever party happens to be in control of whatever proposal at the time, right? So first of all, there's no incentive for politicians to try to regulate social media in a way that benefits people. And also, like, the system is so messed up that like social media companies can just pay politicians not to pass those laws in the first place. I'm afraid to say it, but I think that we're just kind of stuck with what we have right now from a systemic point of view.
Oh, yeah. I think the system we have is not working at all. You know, there might be movement on this, you know, federally, state, whatever. And I think it's all just going to be bad, probably, or deeply flawed in the interest of corporations and companies and not what's good for people. Or in the entrance of, you know, fear-mongering and keeping kids from seeing themselves and having access to information. So that's some doom. You know, I think there's a lot of like doom and gloom out there given the state of the world. Mm-hmm. And one thing that I'm trying to do on both IRL and mostly IRL and in community, but when I do engage with social media, mm-hmm. is trying to make it more generative, supporting people, building, you know, community with other people with aligned values, and, you know, finding moments of joy, finding things in my own life that bring me joy, and kind of trying to take care of myself and do that. So, you know, what are the small things we can do? What are the things that we can do to push for a better world? And how can we build the communities and the kind of love and support that we want to see in our own lives? And how can we expand that out to more and more people?
Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah, just didn't want to end on the doom and gloom.
But doom and gloom is our bread and butter.
okay, but I'm trying to dream a better world and not just be sad about everything being on fire. And, you know, I think it's, you know, in my own life, I'm seeing the like results of that, you know, like my life is becoming so much fuller. And the way that I'm engaging is being, it feels so much better and it feels really good. So, you know, I encourage you, if you're chronically online, to slowly move off of that.
Yeah. Retweet us, though, still.
Oh, retweet us. Yeah. Well, and like I said, I'm on social media still, and I'm slowly, like, starting to get I had to totally detox from social media and just not be on it for a few months. Mm-hmm. And I'm, like, slowly starting to, like, re-engage and figure out how I want to exist online.
Yeah.
And so I'm working towards that. I'm going to be online more, but with like a lot of boundaries and a lot of clarity on how I'm using it. So, Kate, are you ready for some out of context cancellations?
Always.
Okay. We are going to cancel automated pharmacy calls not telling you if your insurance covered the scripts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not a good time. Not a good time.
I hate the surprise when you show up and it's like, oh, you owe us piles of cash.
Oof.
And you're like, I just want to live, sir, please.
So irritating. Also going to cancel LinkedIn push notifications. No, thank you.
Yeah, I actually, this is the second time LinkedIn has come up for me this week. I like deleted my LinkedIn when I got doxxed a couple years ago. So I have no idea what this is about, and I don't want to know.
Amazing. You know, relevant to this episode, the electoral industrial complex.
Yes.
And SCOTUS.
Oh, a twofer.
Twofer. We're also canceling people who want to cancel student loan debt cancellation.
Yeah, we're canceling all of it. Why don't we also go ahead and cancel everybody's student debt? Do we have that power?
Yeah, I don't. I wish I did. I wish I did.
If you want that power, no, I'm just kidding. Log on to our Patreon.
Wait, what? Oh, I guess cancel all of your enemies.
Yeah.
I feel like this is disinformation. Are we sending disinformation to our listeners that we can give them that power? I think we are.
Yeah, but we need the Patreon subs, so can we just go with it?
Anyway,
I'm totally getting canceled for that.
Yeah, you are. I'm canceling you. Cancel getting your hair done platinum so that you can serve gay Sephiroth realness and your partner saying you look like a Moomin. Hopefully some listeners get that joke and are having a good time.
This is truly out of context, you know. When it's so out of context, you even stump the hosts.
We're also going to cancel trees who insist on trying to pollinate our nasal passages. We didn't consent to be part of the windborne orgies. So not we're going to cool. cancel that. Yeah. Not cool. I love that out of context cancellation is one of my favorite we've ever gotten.
I love the windborne orgies. We're also canceling Reddit.
Okay, I actually don't agree with this one. Some of Reddit is a dumpster fire, but there's a lot of Reddit that is helpful and interesting. And I get so many recommendations for things on Reddit if I'm like trying to find like, what's the best whatever, or where do I go for this? Reddit is such a valuable resource.
Is it?
And it is also a cesspool of it's a mixed bag. Can we cancel bad Reddit and keep good and neutral Reddit?
Sure, I guess.
The cancel daddy will not cancel all of Reddit.
I am not a Redditor. I have no opinion.
If anyone wants to cancel me for that, it's okay. I'm mostly a lurker. I'm not an active user of Reddit, but I find a lot of information lurking.
If you would like to submit your own out of context cancellation, you can do so on our Discord server, which you can access by becoming a Patreon supporter.
That's only $5 a month. There are also other tiers where you can get episodes early, and your support helps us sustain the show. Right now, Kate and I are underpaid for making a podcast. You can learn more about that and become a Patreon at patreon.com/cancelmedaddy. And we have tip tiers where, you know, if you don't want any of the rewards, but you want to tip us and help us sustain our show, you can just give $1 or $3 a month. Today's show was made by me, Oliver Ash Klein, and my incredible co-host, Caitlin Burns.
Dee Peterschmidt made our theme song, and ENMW designed our graphics.
Our show is made possible by the incredible cancelers supporting our work, especially the members of our Canceler Hall of Fame, with the great power to cancel all of their enemies, Meg, Dahlia, and Catherine.
We appreciate your support.
Happy canceling!